Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck nicks? What's happening? How's it going? Where are you at? We've gotten it, you know, there is a reprieve at hand, but don't get too comfy. Sorry, I don't want to be negative. I got to get this out because it's been bothering me. My HBO special is taping Thursday, December 8th at Town Hall in New York City. The first show is sold out, has been for months. A lot of people thought the show was sold out, but it's not because there's a second show, which has some tickets. It's close to selling out, but there's tickets. So you can get tickets to the second show. It's at 9:30, and it's all part of the taping. That would be the second taping. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour for ticket info or go to townhall.org. And this is another heads up. Please don't go to Scalp. Go to the venue site. Don't just Google Marc Maron tickets. Go to the venue site. None of my tickets are $400. A lot of these shows still have tickets available. Go to the venue site or go to WTFpod.com/tour. Okay, today on the show, I talked to Wes Bentley. Now, look, man, I remember this guy. I mean, a lot of you know him from Yellowstone or American Horror Story, but you probably saw him for the first time in American Beauty, which was like a breakout performance that really had him pegged as the next big movie star. You remember with the floating bag, you know, the videotaping, the floating bag, whatever. You remember him. It went very differently, and it got pretty dark, and we talk about it. So that's happening. Also, I reposted two episodes since I've talked to you, I think. Gallagher's dead, and Bud Friedman died. Bud Friedman was the proprietor of the original improvisation on 44th Street between 8th and 9th in the early 70s, one of the first actual sort of comedy venues, but it really started more as a variety venue, almost a burlesque venue. But then he moved out here and left his wife that particular club, which I sort of played at during its last stages, the final stages. And then he came out here to set up the improv in the 70s here. It was him and Mitzi at the Comedy Store who were warring factions at the beginning of stand-up comedy clubs. And obviously the improv went on to become a big deal. He gave a lot of people their start. He gave a lot of people opportunities. I did some of my first two TV appearances at Evening at the Improv. I never got the feeling Bud liked me, but you know, we had a good conversation after all was said and done. And he was the P.T. Barnum of stand-up comedy. The first real kind of intrusive impresario of the craft, hosting his own shows at his own club on his own TV show with his monocle. He was a big egoed guy that really was ultimately, no matter how you think about him, a tremendous force and important man in the history of stand-up and in giving us a stand-up comedy as a wide-ranging cultural impactor. Impactor. So go listen to that if you want to hear that. What else? So, you know, it does seem we've been given a reprieve on one front. You know, we just got, in these elections, everyone's excited in terms of, Democrats and people who are not essentially right-wingers Because we just ended up losing a little bit as opposed to a lot. And who knows? We might even, I don't know what's going to happen with the House, but we are neck and neck with fascists. We are neck and neck with the fascists. We are not overwhelmed by them. Yay? Right? I mean, it just seems ultimately that enough regular people had enough of the evil ridiculousness, of the clearly crazy bullshit. That's what I want to believe. They got nervous. They got nervous that the president might be right and that democracy was actually at stake. And I believe they were correct in taking that to heart. I believe that President Biden, on the two times that he talked, maybe you didn't see it, maybe you didn't think it was charismatic enough, but the message was clear. Democracy is at stake, and it is, and it was, and that's that. So we got a bit of reprieve because it seems that whatever we have here, whatever's left of this democracy, it worked despite the propaganda and despite the gerrymandering. It worked. And we got a reprieve. And here in California, it rained for a few days. So everything is just coming up roses this week, literally. We've held the monsters at bay, and climate change doesn't matter for a few days because it rained in Southern California, and it never does. Even you know the song. And I fucking love when it rains. It's such a relief because this place is just a fucking, it looks like it's just going to go up in flames or just die from dehydration. And I imagine in the coming few weeks, it will all return to brittle and tinder-like again. I'm sure that the right will regroup around some new talking points and the menace will pick up again, you know? Culturally, I guess I'm approaching two fronts here. All is still garbage. I do enjoy the demise of Twitter and the hilarious sort of downfall of one of the primary narcissists who drive current culture. I mean, there's a few, but three of them took big hits in the last few weeks. Musk, Trump, and Kanye are all spiraling like bad. And I got to be honest, it's kind of beautiful. Now, Kanye, the other narcissist in this exploration, has been spiraling for a while on and off. But the anti-Semitic version made me nervous, okay? You know, when Kyrie Irving got on board, I became more nervous. As a Jew, I'm a Jew. And look, I've always known about the strain of anti-Semitic imagery and conspiracy within the black community. I've made fun of it. I've talked about it to black people. I mean, it's in some churches, for fuck's sake. Yeah, I'm just happy there was some pushback because of the nature and timing of what was, you know, going on in the world. I got kind of scared that there would be an alignment between the worst of white culture and all of black culture against Jews. I get it. You know, it seems to be one of the one things that brings a lot of people together is anti-Semitism. And oddly, Chappelle dealt with all that from all sides, all the sides that he could, in his monologue on SNL. And he did it so deftly that initially I thought he was giving Kanye and Kyrie a pass and saying basically that their only transgression was saying out loud publicly something that all blacks know to be true and know not to say publicly. And honestly, he was kind of saying that, but he was able to balance and disarm the conspiracy theory and the perspective of the black community with the culture at large and ultimately the cost of transgression, which is a reality when we say shit sometimes, as Dave knows. And it was interesting because the whole riff was about the reality of lines you can't cross. And then he just crossed them again. But it was funny. I get it. I like comedy that goes to the edge for sure. And because of his skill and the way he contextualized it and the way it was organized and just his nature, it was funny. I got laughs. There was smart shit in there and funny shit in there. I'm still thinking about it. But, you know, honestly, I may think it's anti-Semitic tomorrow. We'll see. I'll see. I don't know. I might have to watch it again. Okay, so look, Wes Bentley is here. Season 5 of Yellowstone just kicked off on the Paramount Network. New episodes on Sunday nights. And it was really kind of a treat to talk to this guy. We had a very pleasant chat. Hope you enjoy it. Thank you. pull that thing in.
How far in?
Well, you can move up towards it. You know, it should just be by your mouth one way or the other.
How's this right here?
That's good. It's good. That's good.
Welcome.
Yeah. Come on. Have you done any voiceover work?
No, not effectively.
No?
No, just ADR.
Oh,
does that count?
Really? Not really. It doesn't count.
What?
No, I mean, ADR is ADR, but then you just have to talk normal.
Yeah, no, but I tried. I did try voice acting, but there's so many permanent voice actors that are so much better than me.
I know. Yeah.
They just give it all the time, and they know what they're doing. And I was, you know, I'm thinking I'm a good actor, but when you try that, you know, and you fail, you realize, oh, I don't really know how to do everything.
Right. It's true. Like, it's a weird, specific thing where... I mean, I do it, but it's just varying degrees of me going, what? You know, it's like, what?
Oh.
Or what? Yeah, it's just like different gravelly, aggravated voices.
Maybe I can do that.
You can do that.
I did try, I got close to one job, and it was, I can't remember what the job was, but it was some creature. And I basically just ripped off Animal from the Muppets, and I got as close as I ever got to a job doing that.
Well, it's one of those things, I think, some people just go talk normal. I did the bad guys, right?
Oh, yeah.
And fucking Rockwell, he just talked like himself. And I'm straining my voice. I'm the snake, like, what's going on? You know, and he's just like, hey, man. And I'm like, fuck.
Like, fuck you. What are you doing?
Exactly.
Give her.
Yeah, put a little spin on it, will you?
Sam. He's always lazy anyway.
Is he? Well, he's always Sam. Have you worked with him?
I did. I worked with him on Best of Enemies. What year? That was right before the 2017 or 18. I can't remember when it came out, but yeah, he was.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's great. He has a Southern accent in that, so a little not Sam.
He can definitely do the stuff.
Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, he can, like, I try. You know, accents are. How are you with the accents?
I don't know. I think I'm good, and then no one says, hey, you were so good in that with your accent.
Which
so
one
maybe
did
not.
Are you doing an accent with this one?
No, it's just straight. It's
Montana, it's not accent. When have you done an accent?
I did English accent a few times.
Ooh, that's bold. It worked out?
Well, I don't know. I don't pay attention to reactions to me as much as I can, because I learned either it feeds my ego or it feeds my whatever, my weak thoughts.
Yeah.
So I avoid any kind of reactions.
You do?
I do.
That's interesting, because it feeds your weak thoughts.
Yeah, well, I'm more afraid of it feeding my ego. Like, you know, I don't get so hurt when people don't like what I do,
because
I'm the one trying.
Yeah, right.
You're writing about it, but I'm trying to do it. So I don't really get, unless it's, you know, if it's an audience member, it takes them out of it.
Sure.
Well, I mean, hate that.
But you get that speedball going of like a good post, bad, bad, good.
Yeah.
You just kind of write it out, tweets or whatever.
I try.
You stay away from all of it.
I stay away from it. It's also because I don't want it to influence my performance. Because, you know, this is a thing that's carrying on season by season.
Oh, what, Yellowstone?
Maybe on a film I could let it go. Yeah, on Yellowstone.
So there are comment boards that you specifically...
Never.
Don't deal with.
No. I think, you know, when I was, so I, you know, when I was deep in my drugs and stuff, I was looking for something. I was looking for the recovery, I guess. And so sometimes I'd go online looking for what people said about me. And, you know, hopefully they were like, he'll be good again one day or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was a bad idea. That's when I started to see all the reality.
And that's when I did drugs for 3 more years.
Yeah, I made it much better.
But I remember like early you, mm-hmm. I think I saw that documentary you were in.
Oh my God, no.
Right? About the guys who are going to make it.
Yeah.
Who was it? You and the...
Me and Chad Lindbergh.
Yeah.
And a guy named Greg Fawcett.
Yeah.
And Brad...
who shot it?
Brad Rowe. Brad Rowe had a pretty successful career for a while. A guy named Tony Zierra.
Yeah.
He lived in the house and he just had his cameras.
Right,
he was a director and he would just shoot us doing stuff.
Right.
You know, messing around mostly. And then eventually became, but when I started to, when American Beauty hit, that's when he decided to turn it into
a real thing.
The real thing, yeah.
But it stopped, you know, it didn't show you losing it, did it?
I don't, you know, to be honest, I didn't watch the new, because he recut it. I watched the one we all tried to sell at Toronto. It was the night before 9/11. We tried to sell it and then he went back and he recut it without telling any of us and he disappeared and...
When did you meet Lee Daniels?
I met Lee in New York when I had auditioned for something and got close to it, and he just brought me in to see if he could manage me.
Yeah.
And
he did?
Yeah, and he did, yeah. And it was wild. I mean, you know, the thing about Lee being your manager is he had a creative mind.
Right.
So he really wanted to do really good stuff. And so he was invested in that, and I loved that. So
yeah.
I was all about Lee.
Yeah.
And we had a good team thing going. The only thing that derailed that was two things. He wanted to become a director, and right. I was starting to go off the rails with the drugs.
And you wanted to become a drug addict.
Yeah. I wanted to explore that avenue of LA, you know? Like,
different dreams.
Not enough people do that.
You know, it's weird. I think a lot of people, we don't know about it. It's a weird time in the sense that, like, there was a time where drugs weren't really spoken about as a problem. It was just like, when you heard about it, it was like, no, he had to clean up for a little while. Now he's back. But now it's just like a cultural epidemic. You know,
It's like he had a cold or something. Right, and like, he'll just get over the cold and he'll be fine.
But when people go the way you did, then it's just sort of like, that's not good. They're not going to, because
he might not make it.
Yeah, exactly. Because it was before fentanyl, but anytime anyone gets hooked on dope, you know, you're sort of like, well, that's not casual. That's a, you know.
I mean, I thought it was for a minute, but no, it got me.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But going back though, like, because I don't know the whole story. I talked to Thora.
A few years ago.
That was intense.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
She's intense.
Yeah, yeah.
Both of your lives kind of went off the rails, it seems.
They did. Yeah, they did. It was intense. I mean, it was a lot. And I remember talking to her as, you know, for that movie, when it came out, we did a U.S.
American Beauty.
Yeah, yeah. We did a U.S. press tour. Then, so we bounced around all these cities and colleges showing it, trying to get people excited about it. And I watched it every single time. And it was like, I was really just, my eyes were wide open. I wanted to see all and experience all this. And she felt a little bit like it was making her nervous.
Yeah.
She was ahead of me.
Yeah.
She knew what was coming. And then it was like,
and she had some success before, though. She was a child actress,
right? Yeah, that's right. And so she. But I would see her, and in her eyes, I would get a little worried that what was coming wasn't going to be that great.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Arkansas.
I just met someone from Arkansas on the road. I just did a show in, I think it was in Dallas, and a few women had driven from Arkansas, and I realized, like, I've never been there. It feels like I don't even sense there's a lot of people there.
I feel like I feel like it should be the state motto instead of the natural state. It should be, you know, I don't think I've ever been there.
Yeah. No one ever comes here. Yeah, exactly. Arkansas.
You've never seen it.
What city?
Well, I was born in a town called Jonesboro, which is an hour from Memphis. The Mississippi Delta.
Sure.
And then my parents are both Methodist preachers, and in a Methodist church, they move you around every like 4 years.
Well, I think that's one of the less aggressive churches.
Oh yeah, it was. Now they're having the battle we're all having, right? It's political now.
Yeah.
So they've had a split within that church. But for my upbringing, it was a moderate church, and my parents are liberals.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had a little cocoon there. I had a little place to like be because the state itself was difficult for me.
But they're both the state itself?
The people in the state.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, but you knew that early on?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, knew it right away. Well, see, part of it's that in the Delta, it's majority black. Like, my school was majority black.
Yeah.
Most of my friends were black. My teachers were black. And then when you move out of there to the mountains, you realize, it's not like that for the rest of the state, and it's pretty nasty and pretty racist. And I knew it then, you know, because I
How old were you when you realized that?
That was probably like 8, 9.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, first, let's talk about Methodist. They're both preachers. Did they both have congregations?
Yeah, they both. Yeah, my dad started, and then my mom got her. The word's escaping me. Theology degree.
Yeah.
So she got that after him, and then she started having her own churches. And they would have a couple churches in the area. I mean, they were usually like 30 minutes away because it's rural Arkansas.
Because I noticed that when I was in Kentucky at some point, that there was like literally churches every few miles. mile or so.
Yeah, it's like 7-Eleven.
Yeah, but how does that work? Is it just based on the personality of the preacher?
Yeah, well, some of the churches are you know, they hire their preachers themselves, but the Methodist church is like kind of like the Catholic church or a corporation where they like a business, you know, where the bishops will move you around and tell you where to go.
So there's an American Methodist Church organization.
Yeah. The United Methodist Church, but now it's split. It's going to split into something else with the conservatives going
really
that way. Yeah, I don't know, global something or whatever.
But wasn't Methodist? What made it different?
Good question. I didn't go to many other churches. I mean, I would go visit other churches. They would do talk in tongues at some churches. We didn't do that. They would like do music and modern music and dance for like hours. We didn't do that. It was just like, It was like the method. You would walk in, you'd sit down, you'd listen, you'd sing some nice songs, maybe stand up, pray, listen to the preacher, and you're out of there.
Like the method acting?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, like the method Christianity.
Oh, that's it. So it wasn't high pressure.
No, I didn't feel high pressure.
There's no confessions, no booths,
no guilt.
No sweat, no guilt.
No strange guilt.
Really?
Yeah, at least my parents didn't preach that way.
So was it about really just the teachings of Christ?
You know, that's
in service.
That's what I got out of it. You know what I try to tell people who didn't have a church upbringing or they have skepticism for all Christians. Yeah. I say, you know, some people just believe in the love Jesus was trying to teach, to love each other.
Yeah,
they're not even that concerned about him being the Son of God or anything. It's just that was a different message, especially for the time. He just came in to say, fuck your synagogues, fuck your rules, stop killing animals, stop hating each other, and forget the money.
Right.
And just love each other.
Right.
So anyways, not to go down this too far, that's what I took from it, from my parents, from that church.
Yeah.
And I've always held with me a little bit. Yeah, although I don't go to church now. But stuck
with you?
Definitely.
So you feel the presence of God?
I don't know. I mean, I do feel the presence of God, not in the sense of a church tells me, but in my own, I have a personal connection with God. And as far as Jesus is concerned, it's even if he's not the Son of God, he still had, to me, an amazing message. And and he's not the one who was writing all the things after, right? I mean, they're the ones saying he said this or that. Yeah.
Those gossiping apostles.
God, what were they wanting? Their own thing?
Exactly.
Yeah, but he you know, he never said make a church after me either. You know, these are all the things people wouldn't.
Yeah, it became just a great sort of a basis for a racket.
Yeah, right. It's a RICO.
take this book and go make some money.
Yeah,
you can do it.
Empower.
Yeah, but do you have siblings?
I have three brothers.
Really?
Yeah.
Older?
Two older, one younger. I'm three out of four.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so how'd they turn out?
I mean, I think great. Yeah, okay. they're doing great. My oldest brother is in Kansas City. He has a wonderful family up there. And my the one after him, he works for corporate Walmart, which is a pretty big trip from him because he was the most liberal anti-corporation of the four of us. And
a real radical.
Yeah, and now he's working there. But, you know, he does it with the ethics, so it has some balance.
One guy with ethics at Walmart.
You just need one, right?
Sure, as long as he feels good.
Yeah,
that's true. And the company can go, like, we got one. Got this guy.
He said, you're all fine.
Yeah. And then the other ones?
And my youngest brother, he moved out here in 2002. At first, he was like my stand-in. Then he was going to be my assistant. Yeah, and then for reasons that are, you know, we might even get into later, but that didn't work out. And he started doing his own thing. And now he works at Netflix.
Oh, really?
In a pretty big job there at Netflix. So he, you know, he's doing great. He has a family too. They're all doing great. Yeah.
Yeah. None of the other ones got fucked up.
Oh no, not like me.
Yeah.
No, we had a great upbringing. My parents are incredible. You know, they did everything they could for us.
Track it.
No, there's no thing. You know, like some of us don't have a thing. I wanted to go be stupid and it got real stupid real quick.
But like no grandpa with alcoholism, none of that.
Oh yeah, I had, my mom's dad.
Yeah.
But he passed away before I knew him really.
Yeah.
He was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we have some other family members. Yeah. You know, everyone does.
Sure.
That's why I wonder if it, you know, when they say it's hereditary and all that stuff, I'm like, well, everyone has someone.
Sure.
So do we all have it?
Or? Well, I don't know if that, I guess, I wonder how close it has to be.
Yeah, right.
You know, that'll tip you over. I mean, it doesn't mean you all have it. It means that you all could be activated.
Yeah, that's my...
You got activated.
I sure did. I would think I was like trying to activate everyone around me at the same time.
Of course. That misery loves company and you want to share the good times. So how do you get from Arkansas to acting?
Well, yeah, you know...
Wait, which city in Arkansas did you grow up in for the most part?
Well, I would count... So Mountain Home was that real kind of, I don't want to call it a racist city. Not everyone there is like that, but that's when that switch happened.
Yeah.
And then that's my junior high years. Then my high school years all happened around Little Rock in a town called Sherwood, which is basically part of Little Rock.
Is that a big city? Like, I can't picture it. I feel like I've driven through it, but every city that you hear of that isn't like a city that we know, they're just like, there's nothing there, man.
Yeah, I mean, Little Rock actually does have some cool things. It's got the Clinton Library, which is really interesting.
Sure.
Yeah, and then the riverfront area is kind of cool. But, you know, other than that, I wouldn't say. It's like 100, I think now it's probably 250,000 people.
Small, yeah. Small. Like, I was just in Oklahoma City, and that's pretty small.
Yeah,
but
and that's
like,
bigger than Little Rock. So,
it is,
yeah.
So you're there. Are you acting in high school or what?
Yeah, the way I got into all that was kind of church and my brothers and
church?
My dad. Yeah, church. I know. Because that's really all you got in Arkansas is your church and your school for your outlet, right?
Oh, so they did plays?
Yeah, they would do, my mom would. Yeah. And it's kind of, she got in trouble for it later, ran into trouble with the church because she put on a play that I was in on Christmas Day.
In the church.
And two people hated it and were mad at her for doing it. Said it was sacrilegious and they had her, they worked to get her removed. Which didn't work out, but she just left anyway because she felt so bothered by it.
She got reprimanded?
Basically, yeah. But I mean, not...
What was the button-pushing element of this radical play about Christmas?
It was just... I mean, it's just that we did it because it was really about some people opening presents in their attic.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it wasn't anything... It was good Christian stories, like, yeah. Out of the Bible. Yeah. It's just a way to tell them.
Oh, so you guys... your mom created it?
Well, I know it was written. I can't remember the name of it. Okay, it was so long ago. Sorry.
And they got offended.
And these two people got offended. And they were, like, family friends, too.
Really?
Yeah, it was weird.
So maybe there was other motives.
I guess. Huh? It could be... You know, she was one of the first women preachers of that time. It could be she was a woman. I don't know, huh. You know? Nowadays, I can look at it that way. Then I wouldn't have thought of that.
Is that when you realize the power... Hour of theater.
Get my own mom fired. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, this is something
it's beautiful.
What is it? Like I can move people. So you played a present opener?
Yeah, basically. But you know what really got me into it was, and you're going to love this, because it was the Monty Python. My dad watched Monty Python at dinner and we would watch that while we ate.
Yeah, yeah.
And we all loved it. Like, you know, the skit show before the movies. And so we would reenact them. And my brother's name.
Everyone did that. Look, yeah. Monty Python was so fun.
Yes.
You could do those. Yeah.
And everyone knew them. You know, it wasn't like now where I don't get the TikTok jokes.
But, right. Yeah. Oh no. There's no way to keep up with that shit.
I don't have any idea. But so we did that, and so improv comedy was kind of what we were drawn to, just for fun and
your
taste.
Brothers too.
Yeah, all of us. Yeah.
Oh, so you do the things.
Yeah. So we'd get up in front of people and do skits and improv stuff, and that led to in my high school they didn't do plays. Because they didn't have the money. We did children's play, but we didn't do an actual play.
Yeah.
We would do these competitions.
Right.
So you go around doing like a monologue or a duet. They call it for two people. And so one of them was improv. And that was one of the ones I would win. And I would win all the time. My buddies.
Were you going for funny usually?
Always funny. Always funny. In fact, that got later when I went to Juilliard, that got me in trouble because I thought that's what improv was.
Right. Get some laughs.
Make them laugh. Yeah.
So, all right, so you're doing that, and you finish high school in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're not, are you drinking or anything?
No, I didn't do anything, and I was very much against it, and I very much judged my friends if they smoked weed or drank anything or even talked about it.
Yeah. Oh, boy, there were a lot of people going like, well, I guess Wes is not such a... You remember that guy in high school? Look at him now.
You remember all the things he said to us?
Yeah, yeah.
He did heroin.
Yeah. Got all fucked up. Not so high and mighty anymore.
Well, he's high.
Yeah, that's for sure.
He's certainly not mighty. I did that, and it kind of became a thing at my school even. They loved me and my buddy who did the improv. We would do skits for them too. And they loved it.
Like at lunch and shit?
No, like on stage. They would put up like, you know, like functions or whatever. Yeah. Or like someone would come speak.
And you're doing Monty Python stuff?
No, we do our own things.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we did our own things. And
writing comedy?
Yeah. I mean...
You're in a comedy team in high school.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. I'll take that.
What happened to
the
other
guy? No one will tell you otherwise now, I guess.
Yeah.
He's now in... he's in Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
He does like gymnastics. He teaches gymnastics to kids, and he does security as well. For
out of show business.
Out of show business. Yeah, he went to the Air Force. We split at high school, and
Oh, so you remember when he decided to do that?
Yeah. Well, both of us. Yeah.
But he was going. You went to the Air Force?
No. Like we both. I went to I was going to go to Juilliard, and he went there. Kind of the same. So
how the fuck do you like? You know, from Arkansas, you're doing skits in high school.
Skits, yeah.
How do you get into the premier acting? College in the country.
Well, my mom. So I was kind of looking at, I play soccer, and I was kind of looking at soccer schools or that had soccer and a decent drama program.
Yeah.
But like I was looking at Western Kentucky or like St. Louis University, something like that. So she was like, no, I think you should try Juilliard. And I said, what's that? And she said, it's an acting school in New York. I said, okay, sounds cool.
Yeah.
They have an audition in Chicago. You want to go? I said, yeah, okay, sure, I'll go. And you have to learn a Shakespearean monologue. A what?
Really?
Yeah, well, I knew it from class, but I didn't quite know what she meant. So I chose Macbeth, which which apparently you don't not supposed to do, and I think that might have caught their attention alone. But it was also I delivered at such a slow pace that their first note to me was that was great, but if you did if everyone did Shakespeare like you did, it would take 6 hours to finish the play.
Right.
But I don't know. I made a mark. We went up there and I got in. I don't know what they were thinking.
Wait,
but...
so you just you did Macbeth and what other one?
Oh yeah, so I had to do a contemporary that I had used in the I can't remember it now. From Life and Death. I can't remember the writer. It's From Life and Death and From Life and Death. Yeah, if I'm getting that wrong, I apologize, but that was my contemporary and I was really good at that one. I really had that locked down from all the competition.
And you just found it in a book?
Yeah, it was just in the, you know,
yeah,
the
monologue book.
Yeah, the monologue book said that.
So you just go from Arkansas to Chicago with your mom, with Macbeth, and you've never really taken in Shakespeare before.
No.
But did you feel like your pace was just so you wouldn't fuck it up?
Well, I was dramatic pauses, right? I mean, I thought, I'm from the film generation. Yeah. I didn't see stage, so I was just like, I was doing all
so
these.
So you already knew that.
Yeah.
You're like, I know I got
to. I know how to do that.
Yeah,
yeah,
space it out.
Yeah, really take breathe through it, you know, let them know I'm feeling it.
Yeah.
I really want them to know I'm feeling
Where'd
it.
Where'd you learn that shit?
Just like watching other actors, I guess, or on, you know, TV.
Yeah.
TV's a little different, right?
So you're already kind of like just doing the flourishes and, you know, letting shit sit.
I love movies. I mean, movies were really my draw to acting. So, you know, that was my influence to get into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And you got in?
I got in.
That's crazy.
It was crazy getting that phone call because, I didn't expect it. I knew I had a good audition, but there were many kids. So
yeah.
Yeah.
And what was it? So you moved to New York?
I did. I moved to New York at 17 years old. I was 17 because I was young for my class. I turned 18 like the first month.
Did you live on campus?
Did
they have that?
Yeah, they have dorms above the, you know, like on 66th Street by the Lincoln Center and all that. And so I stayed up in the dorms, yeah. And I went there and I didn't have a clue. And I had a Southern accent and they hate.
You got
rid
of
that? At the time, they hated it.
Well, you had it?
I had it and I could hear it and I was good at, I have a good ear so I could avoid it, but not as far as they're concerned. So they had me do extra time. Yeah, the voice and speech teachers. At the time, that was the intense thing there. It's different now. But,
I've talked to people that have been there. It's very competitive and they kick people out. And it's kind of brutal and there's definitely a system that seems antithetical to creating personalities.
And that was you nailed it. That was my problem. I don't know if other people have said this, but when I was there in my first year, I went to the fourth year showcase to see, because they show, you know, to the agents will come and see these fourth year students.
Oh, so you guys just went as, you know, because you were new at school.
Yeah, they were like, come check it out.
What you were working towards.
Right. And all I saw was, or heard really, was the same voice and dialect.
Yeah.
Out of all the men, women, didn't matter their ages and what role they were playing, they all sounded exactly the same. And they would tell you, that's what we're going to do. I mean, it takes a few years after that to shake out of it and make it your own. In my head, I was like, I don't think I want to do that.
Yeah.
I was real into, like you said, having a personality and making it my own. And
so how was that first year for you?
Rough in a lot of ways. Also amazing. I mean, it was eye-opening. I didn't know anything about theater history. I didn't really know how to dig into the depths.
Of you?
Of me or of the character.
Mm.
I mean, I did a little. I had tricks, as they say. I had things I could do to make you think I was doing that.
Isn't that half
effective? But yeah, I mean, now it's hard for me to say that now doing this show for so long because it's become, we can talk about that later, but it's almost consuming. But
Yellowstone?
Yeah, yeah. But at the time, I didn't even know how to dig past my own stuff.
Right. And well, so, I mean, it's always the sort of kind of question around acting is that, you know, everyone's got a different approach to it.
Yeah.
But basically, you're pretending to be somebody else.
Yeah. That's
so,
it.
Yeah. And I think to some people, it just comes easy. Who the fuck knows? You know, like it really depends on what you expect out of it for yourself.
I firmly believe that.
Right. But if you've got the knack and you could pull it off and everyone's like, wow, you were really in it. And you know, like,
not even close. What was his name again?
Yeah. I mean, so what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't
owe
it to anybody to explain that. If it has the effect, it has the effect.
I totally agree. Yeah. When people ask me, how, you know, does your work style conflict with someone else's work style? No. We're all trying our best to get out what we need to do to play this character. So whatever they're doing, that's great.
Yeah.
Whatever
when they go action, you just sort of like, you're in it.
You're in
it. And then like 3 minutes later, it's over. And then you do it from another angle.
Right.
And then a third angle.
And they're
40
all different.
times. Yeah.
And they're all different.
I don't think people especially with movie and TV acting, really understand just the plotting pace of it. There's no continuity to it. I mean, just to hold on, you know, it's amazing they can pull shit together.
It's a, you know, I often think more actors who win awards or whatever should be thanking the editor more often because your performance really is the editor's decision to how they put together what you did.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
The way it all works. And like a lot of times when you're doing something, you're like, how's this going to come together?
Yeah.
This is there's no way they're going to make a movie out of this.
I do that all the time. You do. Oh my God, I have no clue. I've learned that I'm really bad at that.
Yeah, what? I can't, when I read a script, I don't understand what that was. All I can see is the words that I'm supposed to say, but like where I'm supposed to be, what's happening. I'm like, someone has to tell me that. Like when this one we're shooting today, does this happen before or after that thing we did before? After? Okay, good. So I'm tired.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's the method.
There you go. All right, so I just walked out of that place. And I'm a little aggravated. Okay.
But you know, you're not. It really is just emotions, right? Yeah, I mean, really what we're doing, we're just portraying whatever emotion they're in that moment. Anything deeper than that's like, you know.
It's projected onto it. Yeah. Or you can certainly fill it up with backstory if you want. But, but that sort of seemed to be what you were good at from the beginning.
Yes.
Was having kind of like, kind of wide open with that shit.
I was, yeah. I think I was more ready to learn and do all that than I think the other kids in my class at Juilliard, because they had all gone to acting classes and stuff. So they had a preconceived idea of what they wanted to do.
So what were they trying to do to you in that first year?
Well, they wanted to really get my speech down. I have a tongue tie, like,
yeah,
you know,
mine's
a little
all
thing.
Fucked up.
Is it? Yeah, so it's like it hooks, so it's hard for me to hit the T's and stuff. So
oh, really?
Sometimes I hit the teeth and it sounds like a duh instead of a tuh.
Dude, my L's are like W's and I lisp a little bit and it's just like it's a disaster.
I don't hear that, but
they're rolling L's, but what
I can't do the rolling L's at all.
I have rolling L's, which means I do them with my throat, not my tongue. It's like la, so it's not even a la. There's no le. It's just like gah. I don't know, but no one's it.
Same. I couldn't get my jaw would close as I did it, so that would quiet the voice.
And they got hung up on that.
They got real hung up on that, man. They wouldn't. They kept maybe stay after class.
Holy shit! I would go nuts.
They whenever it was a group, they would focus on me for like longer than everyone else.
Really?
Yeah. And it was really irritating.
Yeah.
Because
I
got to
stay after. Hey, hillbilly.
We made a mistake in you. Can we fix it, please?
What were we thinking?
Yeah.
You fooled us with your pausing. Yeah. We thought you were a genius.
You're a master. Yeah, no. You're just dumb.
Yeah, yeah. I got in here because I acted. Yeah, and you guys bought it.
Yeah, I acted. Yeah. I fooled you into thinking
exactly.
I was a good actor.
So what else happened? So did they beat it out? Yeah, something must have took.
Yeah, well, no, I actually ended up leaving. So,
But you must have, like, the process must have learned something.
Oh, yes, yes. Sorry, mostly what I learned was, so a way I've told to other people is what they do there is they're going to strip you down the first year, take away all your ideas of yourself, take away all those tricks, take away all those plans you have.
Yeah.
Take them away, and they said you were going to be a blank slate.
Yeah.
And I liked that. I thought that was right.
Yeah.
Something about that sounded right to me.
Yeah.
Be a blank canvas for every
But not
role.
If they terrorize it out of you.
No, they didn't. That part they didn't. That was real easy for me to attach to because I wanted to go far. You know, like I learned stories there. I don't know if this is entirely true. That the Moscow Theater, they would, you know, back in the day, they would rehearse a play for a full year before they put it on.
Yeah.
And I thought that sounded amazing to go into that depth into the characters and explore all that stuff. And even if it's hard. So part of me was really ready to do that, even though I wasn't capable yet. I was open to that. Yeah.
You know Bernthal?
John? Yeah, yes, I do. Yes,
You know, he did that. He was like up in Russia doing Russian theater.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, he's like hardcore, that guy.
Wow.
He's a real kind of like, you know, do the work dude.
Okay.
Yeah,
I got to talk to him because I don't really make the effort to go there.
Yeah.
Like, I think I just like, I'm ready for some, for me, it's not, I always saw it as just like dropping all the things rather than adding all the things.
Right.
Like I needed to quiet all the me, quiet all, so I would go silent. I don't take notes. I don't write anything down. I don't.
When you're preparing?
Yeah. I never write anything down when I'm doing it. Cause
you locked into the blank slate thing, but you didn't like the process.
No, I didn't like the sound of the actors.
The blank slate's one thing, but then to sort of wire you all to kind of void your personalities.
Yeah, what they're going to replace it with is some robot, some Juilliard robot.
Or just a bore. You know, like, you know.
We want the kids to go to sleep in the theater so the adults can watch.
Well, I think they're just, it's sort of like, you know, Mamet does sort of a take on that too, where he believes that it's all in the lines and it doesn't matter even whether you can act. Do you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
Like, you know, it's so it's demeaning almost.
Yeah.
It's like, you're here to serve my story. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I don't like that. But I understand good writing can carry the day.
Sure.
And you get out of the way of really good writing as best you can. But no, it's not, I don't, you know, that's no fun either.
Like, no.
You know, we so want to do something.
What happens? Did you blow up?
I know.
Lose your mind?
I started to get sick of it, and
you got in trouble.
One of my friends, I didn't really. I somehow avoided trouble there, and I did start smoking weed there though. But that was the one that helped.
Uh-huh.
The weed was one that, because I was a temperamental.
Take it easy.
No, I don't mean I don't mean helped. Like, you know what I mean. What I'm trying to say is, I could see people using it as a medicine because at the time I had a hard temper. And I was really quick to beat myself up if someone judged me. And something about it did switch that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not advocating down that road. I'm just saying
everyone's going down that road. We live on that road. You can just go buy it like it's fucking McDonald's.
That's
now.
Why your Postmates orders are all wrong, by the way.
Yeah, probably. To be honest with you, I've got like, you know, I'm 23 years something changed sober. Mm-hmm. And that's the one I miss.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, man, it's like, when you see it now, like the people just like, did you like it? It's cheap.
Yeah.
And you can just buy it legally.
Yeah. They're doing it everywhere.
I know. And like, you know, I see, cause there's dudes at the Comedy Store that, you know, that are in the business and they bring these buds and shit. I'm like, do you know how rare that was when I was smoking weed 23 years ago to see one of those buds? You're like, where did that come from?
It's like gold.
Yeah. Like Canada. Like yeah.
Hawaii?
It's crazy.
I remember that. Yeah, especially the New York dirt weed. That was my first experience.
What, going downtown, getting garbage in Washington Square Park?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Oregano out of the...
or they had delivery services. When I was in New York, there used to be like this health food store you could go in with a card.
Oh, really?
And they'd set you up. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And they had it was downtown.
Okay.
I can't remember who gave me the card, but it was like, it was never that good. You just had to find a guy.
Yeah.
And now you don't even need a guy anymore.
In the store, you walk into the store.
A store!
I'm with you though. It's crazy because also, like, it's broken down to all its components, and people are always talking about all that stuff.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Well, this one, you won't even feel it, but it'll make you nicer.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah. What? How do you not feel it? What are you guys doing?
I know. You got to stay away from the thinking. It's like, I can feel it.
Yeah.
Tugging, like, because I'm old now, and I'm 23 years sober, right? And there's part of me that's like, I need to smoke weed, but I know.
Yeah.
I'll smoke it every day.
Yeah.
All day.
It'll be, you'll lean on it. I mean, that's what we do.
Every day.
We're looking for something to lean on.
Every day.
Yeah.
I would smoke it every day and I would love it. And I would just be like a moron.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Inside a year, I'd be like, what day is it? You know, like I'm almost that way already.
Back to the bliss. Ignorance and such.
Oh, sure. But how'd you get in trouble for being funny over there? You said you got in trouble.
Oh, yeah. So we would do improvs, you know, and like I would try to make a joke out of it, make them laugh. And they were looking for you to explore the character with depth and really like
improvs within characters within plays.
Yes, right. Or just a concept.
Oh, okay.
So that's right. We would pick out a monologue,
right,
and then you would go in depth with that,
right.
And then he did one where he just really went at me. I was playing John Wilkes Booth.
Yeah.
And he really
hilarious
went at
guy.
Me. He's so funny.
Yeah. An actor too.
Classic comedian.
Yeah.
He wanted you know, I wasn't really trying to be funny with him. I was just, it was light still. So my idea still wasn't about the depth. And he hammered me and hammered me until I was there, you know, as they say. He just didn't let me go until I got there, and I did, and it was eye-opening. It was beautiful.
Really?
Yeah, and it was something I used to this day, that now what he's doing, you know, no longer I'm trying to make myself laugh. It really is exploring the depths and the realities of a day-to-day character.
Really?
Yeah, so I was appreciative, but it was
embarrassing. How did he make you do it?
He just kept, stop thinking about it. He's like, he was this older man, John Stecks, and he'd just sit like a little wise man and barely move.
Yeah.
He goes, stop. I'd be in it, stop. I'd stop and I'd be frustrated and looking around at everybody, thinking about them judging me. And he said, Wes, you have to stop thinking.
Yeah.
You've got to stop thinking.
Yeah.
Go. And it was like, I'd do it and he goes, stop.
Oh,
stop.
So the self-awareness, you mean the self-consciousness.
Yeah, he knew I knew I was in that room.
Right.
He's like, you have to be in the room John's in.
Yeah.
You got to stop being in this room at Juilliard and be in that barn where he's about to get burned out.
Right.
Got to be in that room. His life's in danger. Stop thinking about us.
Wow. And and eventually you got there and you realized like, okay, I got to do that.
Yeah.
That's something I can use.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I have. Yeah.
Wow. So how do you leave Juilliard?
Well, so a friend wanted to go audition for Rent, and I sort of sang.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go to class that day, so yeah. I said, I'm going to go with you to your audition to Rent. It was a cattle call outside of Bernie Telsey's office.
Yeah. I know that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't he have a little theater, too?
He might have.
Bernie Telsey.
He was, I don't know if he had a theater, but he's the big man on Broadway for casting.
Right, right. Broadway caster. I remember meeting him at some point, because I lived in New York.
I'm sure you did, yeah.
They sent me out for things I never got.
I got lucky with him. So standing in that line outside, another casting director had walked down the line, was handing out her card, and she handed her card to me and said, come read for this movie later. And I was like, okay, is it a porn?
Yeah.
Like, why are you handing out cards?
Yeah.
And she said, no, it's legit. Just come down to here and read for it.
Who was that?
Meredith Jacobson.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And she's no longer doing it. And she barely was doing it then.
Yeah.
So I went in and I actually got the callback for Rent. And that made me feel confident enough to go, I'm going to go try this audition. And my friend left, went back to school, and I went to go to the other audition. And 7 callbacks later, I got it, and Kate Walsh was in it, and it was a tiny little nothing movie.
Yeah.
But getting it, I went and told Julia, I said, look, I'm out of here. I'm going to go do...
I'm going to go to work.
Yeah, I'm going to go work on this stuff now. And they asked me to stay to the end. Actually, my classmates wanted to make sure I stayed to the end to do the project we were working on.
Oh, for the first year, you mean?
Yeah, but I wanted to go then. It didn't feel right for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you go?
I went. I left. Yeah,
Stay for the year.
No. Oh no. I did stay for the year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. My friends were right. I should. Yeah. And it was nice to stay, and it felt right
to get some closure and like good luck.
Yeah. And like
not just be like, what happened to that guy?
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
He got strung out on heroin.
Haven't you heard? Really made something of himself. What class did we take for that?
So that was the first movie, and that helped you. And then I mean. You did a few, right?
Yeah, well, that one helped me get an agent there, and that helped me book something called White River Kid with Antonio Banderas and Bob Hoskins, and that was shot in Arkansas. So Arnie Glimcher directed it. He had directed...
Who else was in it?
Antonio Banderas, Bob Hoskins.
Bob Hoskins.
Ellen Barkin,
Barkin, those are big people.
Yeah, it was a big movie. It was great to go back to Arkansas, where I had really put up with a lot of... borderline bullying from certain people, and it's satisfying to go back and get all these phone calls from all those kids. Hey, you want to come hang out? Hey, Wes, they're talking to me like they were my friend.
Right, right, right.
So there was some satisfaction in that.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, but then I auditioned for after that I auditioned for American Beauty.
Yeah,
it kind of kicked my way in the door there with Lee. Lee helped me. We went to LA. He's like, just go in.
So you met when did you pick him up?
That was in New York after Juilliard.
Okay.
So I met him through through a casting director as well.
And, are you guys still friends?
Yeah, we're still friends. Yeah, It ended weird, bad because I was starting to go off the rails, and he was ready to move on to direct. So we had a moment there. We didn't talk, but it was good after that.
Nothing worse for a manager than a client that's fucking out of his mind.
Oh, he was done with me. I said no to everything, and he was just like, can we do something?
Like leave the house?
Can like you drugs, leave? You mean?
Wow. Yeah. All right, so you do American Beauty, which was like a great movie.
Thank you.
It was.
I mean, I didn't make
great.
It, but...
No, but you were great, and everybody was great in it. It was
I appreciate that.
You know, you did, I think you took some comedic flack for the bag, but
it's great.
Yeah, you had nothing to do with that. It was great.
No, I love I love people make fun of the bag. I mean, it was borderline even for us, you know?
You guys were laughing at it? Yeah.
Well, it's on the fence. It's like, it's a bag. And even Thora was like, I don't get it. Well, we shot that scene and she kept, after every take, she said, I just don't get it. You know, I'm giving it, borderline crying, you know, trying to really make this something. And she, I don't see it.
No, I found the whole thing effective.
Yeah, it was the writing. You know, I think it blew up for me. And I've had a lot of years to think about this.
Yeah.
And I think I'm right. I think a combination of the great writing, I did a decent job, and the fact that nobody knew who I was really made this character stand out.
Yeah.
Because if they had kind of even known me or other movies had come out, I think it would have had less of an impact because I don't think I was that good at it.
Right. No, I think you were. I thought you were very good in it. But I think like now talking to you and knowing like, you know, where you were coming from as an actor, you were right for the part.
Oh, thank you.
Right?
Yeah. I felt right for the part.
Yeah.
As soon as I read it, I just knew it was mine. I didn't have a doubt in my mind the whole audition process. I should have.
Yeah.
Brad Renfro was the main guy they wanted. He's great. I'm a great actor.
It's so weird because adding the two of you. Jeez.
The late 90s, man. We were all doing
But he's
something.
Gone, isn't he?
He's gone. He's gone, yeah.
Bad. It was bad.
Real bad. He was real bad, yeah, yeah.
Did you guys hang during the using times?
No, I think that's probably good, yeah. I don't think I would have made that. You know, I tended to hang by myself when I got to the dangerous stuff. But.
All right, so you do this amazing movie. Renfro was great, too, though. He was a good actor.
Yeah.
So then everything takes off?
Yeah, yeah. And in overnight, I got sent these faxes of what the press were saying about before they were going to release it.
Yeah.
And the things I was reading were just blowing my mind because it was a level I never thought I'd ever,
yeah,
ever reach or someone would ever say about me.
Right.
So yeah, and then you know, immediately recognizable overnight, everything changed.
Yeah.
Everything changed.
Yeah.
It's hard to describe even now because it's like, it's every facet of your life. So, you know, I could like list everything, you know.
But now you're like the king of the town here.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And it's that's not like nothing
no,
in Hollywood.
No.
You got clothes, people want to buy you things, people want to give you stuff.
Lots, yeah. That was the weird trip because I grew up, you know, I'm not poor, but lower, you know, we didn't have a bunch of money. Definitely Walmart clothes and you hang on to it as long as you can. To be then gifted a bunch of stuff, I could see the world for what it was in a moment.
Taking pictures of you.
Oh, the pictures I hated. I got really nervous about the attention because.
But didn't you do like fashion spreads and shit?
I did, yeah. I didn't want to. You talking about Time Out New York and all
whatever.
That?
Whatever, I don't know.
Vanity Fair, I remember all that.
All that stuff.
Yeah, it was weird. I didn't want that side of it.
I think it's like you're one of those rare people for them, like, you know, that they saw a movie star, right? Because you could act and you're a good-looking guy. And that doesn't happen all the time. Usually the actors, you know, kind of squishy and weird-looking sometimes. But,
so
you got all the shit working and they're like, this is our guy. We're gonna hang clothes on him for the rest of time.
And pictures. Yeah. Yeah, they did that. They tried to do that.
Yeah.
But that was part of my rejection because I had a hard rejection to all this. I tried to.
You pushed back.
I did. I let go, I should say, because it was friendly. I let go of publicists immediately. I was like, this is not for me. I don't want to go running around, you know, sticking strawberries in other girls' mouth. And I didn't want to.
That's pretty specific.
There was a shoe, right? Okay. That was kind of my line. Like, what are we doing here? Like, and this is not me. So, you know, it was the 90s too. It was what we all were kind of, we wanted to be legit, like, you know, have credibility.
Yeah.
We weren't like sellouts, all that. We were trying to avoid all that.
Who's we?
Just the 90s actors. I mean, in general, the vibe
in the
90s.
Who were your peers?
My peers at the time people who would inspire me would be more like Nirvana.
Sure. Oh yeah. Okay.
Groups like
that, right.
And Pearl Jam, that kind of vibe.
The whole thing
was like rejecting fame, rejecting attention or money.
Corporate money.
Yeah. Corporate money.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, sure.
Now, if you don't sell out, you're a moron.
You're an idiot. They want you to sell the minute
you've got to become your brand. You're a brand.
No, man. No.
Yeah, man.
My brand is schlub. Schlubby.
Well, I mean, so where did you start to feel it come unraveled?
They were, you know, the pressure of having to decide what was next. And
were you offered Spider-Man?
Yes.
You were?
Well, yes. And I don't know the real story. You know, I always hear it and I thought I knew it at the time. All I understood to be I was had the offer because it was up to me
From Lee?
Lee was telling me that.
Yeah.
So it was up to me yes or no. And he was constantly pressuring. And I was a no from the beginning. At the time,
Spider-Man.
Superhero movies were like, nobody was. Uh-huh. You know, we had come off the end of the Batman stuff with Val killing the nipples.
Oh, so
and
right.
All
so this is like, so Spider-Man, that was the beginning of the whole Marvel thing.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it was kind of even pre that, still kind of, but it definitely was cooler than I, you know, became cooler than I expected it to be. And not that I would probably say no even more.
Yeah.
But I just didn't want that to be.
So I turned down Spider-Man. Is this when you were using?
I was starting to use. It wasn't heavy until later, but that was starting to have an influence on my life.
Well, so when does that happen exactly?
Oh, the drugs being the influence?
Yeah, yeah.
Cocaine was kind of the first problem. That happened when I was shooting American Beauty, first time I tried it. But I didn't do it a bunch.
Yeah.
It was kind of maybe on the weekend if someone else had it.
Yeah.
But I was open to it. Yeah,
so
let's do that.
What year was that?
99, 2000.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So cocaine was still kind of around its back. I feel like it took a hiatus.
I think it did, but it was definitely
around
cooking
then.
In. Yeah, everybody was all about it then.
Yeah.
Heroin was coming like right after that, but it was still a coke kind of town then. Yeah.
So you're doing the coke on American Beauty.
doing the coke, drinking more, you know, the weed and all that, and heavy weed.
Heavy weed.
Affecting my performances, affecting my press.
Were you high during American Beauty?
No, not at all.
Oh, really?
No.
You never got high in the roles?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Not there. I had somehow dodged it. Starting at Four Feathers, which was not long after that, I was a certain section of that movie, I was doing quite a bit of blow. It wasn't that I was doing it on set, but I would definitely not be off it. You know, the effects were still there when I was trying to work.
Can you see it?
Not in that one.
In your performance?
Because I was young, I think. I somehow got away with it. And most of it's in Morocco where I did not do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
It was when we got to London.
Getting that kind of trouble.
I'll just be. yeah.
All right, so then the game of their lives?
Yeah, so I'll just say in this period, I was saying no to a lot.
Yeah.
You know, what happened after American Beauty was basically I got offered everything in my age group, everything. Yeah. And I had to pick, and I was not ready for that. I didn't really want to make it at a young age.
Yeah.
I knew the good roles were coming.
Sure.
So, it was hard for me to pick stuff. And Game of Their Lives is a soccer movie, so I love soccer.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to kind of push it.
Did it work?
It's not a good movie. It's not a bad movie. It's not a good movie. It's just kind of the story itself, the guys.
So you're turning down all these defining movies of your generation.
Yeah.
Because you want to be a good actor and you want to hold out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you did a bunch of
terrible movies. Just be honest. Yeah.
And you start using drugs.
Yeah. Yeah. So it like you said, the wheels came off. The decision making was gone. I mean, I should have.
But what precipitated. Was there a thing where the wheels came off?
Yeah. Well, there was. I was in a bad relationship, where we weren't helping each other.
Sure.
And that was certainly a catalyst for.
Yeah.
She definitely made it okay for me to say no in a stupid way to a lot of things.
Oh, really? So you're like locked in?
Yeah, I think I was getting a reputation for being difficult and don't even bother with him anymore, kind of a thing.
No.
No one was really able to get me out of it. Not that they should have.
That didn't work out. What, the guy from American Beauty? Yeah. Yeah, that's...
That's it, yeah. That was the talk. He's that, bust.
Yeah.
Or a cautionary tale, as they say.
So you started to feel that happen.
I started to feel like it. I could tell because the offers were getting worse. The money was getting lower.
Yeah. The tomb?
The tomb. Oh, my God. The tomb... that was an Edgar Allan Poe. Was The Tomb supposed to be an Edgar Allan Poe short story about Ligeia?
Uh-huh.
And they called it The Tomb later. And I was really messed up on that. That was my low. So those are the movies that era.
It's good to hit bottom on a movie called The Tomb.
I never thought about that. It was a choice. I'm going to pretend like this is a choice.
So who the fuck turns you on to dope?
Just people I was hanging around. You know, so part of it was that...
Were you smoking it? Like, was it that tar shit?
Yeah, I only smoked it. I should say I injected it once, and that was awful. I never liked dope.
Yeah.
I never liked it. I hardly liked coke. But once you start doing it, you're doing it.
Yeah.
And I was also killing pain. At this point, I was dealing with, in this bad relationship. It was something.
So
it's
right
like
around 2005-ish.
Yeah, six,
after
seven,
the soccer
eight.
Movie.
Yeah, 2006 through 2008.
Yeah,
or were my lows. That's when heroin was prominent.
And you were just smoking it.
Just smoking it, and I did it to balance the coke feeling. I thought
that
was smart. You know,
You got to sleep.
Sleep. I was just desperate to like. I don't think I slept except Sundays. It was only when I sat down to watch football.
You couldn't even take the edge off.
No, it was. Oh, I was kind of a. It was scary, man. I was all week. I'd stay up all week. I'd go looking all night for it. It was
where downtown.
Downtown at the time, Hollywood. Before they kicked everyone out of Hollywood
for the tar shit.
Tar.
Yeah.
Yeah. No China White stuff or anything like that. It was the tar. Yeah. That black
out here. Yeah. That shit from from Mexico. China White was on the East Coast.
Right. Or Australia.
Is it white? Yeah. Is it white? Australia?
Yeah. So I did it once in Australia.
Yeah. That was the good stuff.
Yeah. 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 I know. I'm kind of happy that wasn't.
You could just snort that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to smoke that tar shit.
And I did a lot. Yeah. I did a lot.
Ugh.
Yeah.
So you got strung out.
Very strung out, very noticeable. My family were trying to figure out how to intervene. My brother tried. I left the girl I was with and moved in this tiny little apartment in East Hollywood, like little Armenia, and I just shacked up, did a bunch of drugs, and made this terrible music on my computer and watched too many cuts of my movies constantly. I was trying
really?
I was just trying to heal whatever
What was the point of watching the movies?
I thought it made me feel better about myself. I think.
Oh.
Because I was really like, you know, it was
so you're sinking. Getting all skinny and weird and pale and
yeah.
sweaty.
Well, I got like, I got like sort of bloated in my face and, you know, I didn't get the skinny so much, but I you could tell my eyes. Because
you were drinking a lot too?
Yeah, I didn't. That's another one I didn't like, but did. You know, if I had.
You weren't enjoying yourself at all?
No, because I was more of a psychedelics guy. I did all that because that was the crew I was running with. They went that hard stuff. And once you start, you know, you're locked in. I did not like it. That's what's crazy about it.
You didn't like it for 3 years?
I didn't like the feeling of it. No, isn't that crazy? I mean, of course, there were moments where I thought I did, but it was just because I was easing the pain of withdrawal.
Yeah,
right. It really wasn't like I was loving. You know, immediately with heroin, it's all you're doing is trying to ease that withdrawal. It's not.
Yeah,
for me, it wasn't. I didn't get that euphoria everyone gets.
Never.
Or the 10,000 orgasms. Like
not even the one time you shot it?
No. I felt sick, and I don't like being like drunk and stuff where you're incoherent. You can't keep your head up.
Right.
And that's all that did.
Wow. So you did all these years of horrible drug use.
Ketamine. I did all this.
But you never had a good time.
No. No, I mean, no. I would go dancing. Ecstasy, actually.
That's different.
We skipped the ecstasy beer. That was kind of the bridge way. And that's when I would go dancing. I DJ'd a bit. And
oh,
I
loved
like house music. And
but so I, like during this time, you're doing P2.
Yeah.
The ungodly.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
Was that Nicolas Cage?
Yeah, and I had a good time on that, actually, even though I didn't do a good job on it. I really could have done a better job with that. Everyone else was doing some fun stuff, at least, and I think I just was trying to get to the club. And
yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, Sam Elliott was great. Yeah. Everyone on it, I had a great time on that one.
Was Nick good? Did you talk to
him? Yeah, I had a good time with Nick. Yeah. Oh, not much. You know, he had a baby on the way.
Okay.
And he was trying to keep clean and stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We wouldn't have.
Right.
Then.
Stay away from that trailer. That's what they told him.
Yeah, that's basically what was written on my forehead and my shirt, I think, at the time. Stay away from that guy.
He's going to suck everybody in if we're not careful. So the tomb, that was it. That's your bottom.
Yeah, the tomb.
Are you high on that movie?
Oh, yeah, very. That was St.
Dolan's Cadillac? What is that?
So that was that's a Stephen King short story, and that's where I started to get the inkling that I wanted, that something was amiss.
Yeah.
I needed to get clean. So I met a girl on that named Jackie, who's now my wife. And so I met her.
You met her fucked up?
I came into Canada, couldn't carry anything with me, and they didn't have anything in this little town.
So you're sweating.
So I was sweating it out. I had some methadone that I snuck in, and so that eased me off it. And then I was just kind of drinking.
You were on methadone?
I was not prescribed it or anything, but someone gave it to me to
So you wouldn't lose it?
Yeah, because they knew I was going to if I didn't, and I would have.
So you had to smoke a lot of heroin to get that strung out.
Oh, I was a lot. Yeah, I was. I prided myself on being the guy who could do the most and stay alive.
And so, what was your daily habit?
At the worst of it,
yeah.
I don't remember now. Definitely more than a gram. I mean, probably like a couple grams, right?
So you like a couple hundred a day?
Oh yeah. I threw all my money at it, and then when I didn't have money, I'd beg for more, and then the running out of money and meeting the girl, going to Canada.
Did you ever find yourself in positions that were?
Oh yeah. Yeah, one guy came to my house and kicked the door down. I was afraid one guy was gonna like shoot me. I was walking back and forth in my house, checking the windows, or apartment.
Really?
Checking the windows, just thinking they're gonna show up any moment, yeah. I would've been probably 1,000 or something. I worked that out, but
Yeah,
that was scary. And you know, like I said, I'd go downtown. That was scary too. I'd hang with people all day. I'd pick up someone downtown, go downtown, someone who's living on the street maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'd all want to go get drugs. We'd all go get drugs and go smoke downtown in my Cadillac.
Yeah.
Hang out all day like that.
Wow.
It's crazy.
You're lucky you weren't shooting.
Yeah. I drew a line there for some reason.
It's one of those lines. I drew that line too.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you heroin as well?
Not really.
Okay.
I just didn't take to it, but it was definitely blow. And I smoked heroin a few times.
Yeah.
But it was, you're just, when you're in drug world, you're in drug world.
Yeah.
But I think that was my line was because like I felt like if I did that, if I was to try heroin by shooting it, then there's the possibility I'll never get out.
Yeah, I thought that too. I thought that, because I hung with people who did that, and they like shit themselves. They were laid out on the couch. They were like abscesses all over their arms.
So you're hanging out with those guys.
Yeah, because they're also doing meth. They were doing the meth heroin flip.
So you were a meth guy too?
No, I didn't. So I would judge them as, you know, then by then I was smoking crack and yeah. making it myself. And I was like, you guys are gross and dumb. And then they're like, you're gross. And
so you're making your own sad. Crack. You're yeah. basing.
I'm basing, yeah. And that costs a lot of money too, yeah.
A lot of money. A
lot of money.
To ruin coke.
Yeah.
To figure out how to do that. Just the learning curve is going to cost you a bit of money.
Yeah, yeah, true. That was the worst when it would disappear in the water. Like that was just that was going to be terrible for 4 days.
He fucked it up. You did the baking soda. He yeah. didn't pull it together.
No. Oh, there it goes. Oh,
yeah. And you drank it.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah, whatever it takes. Oh, I would dig around on my floor. Like, I had back problems for a while because I'd dig around on my floor for hours looking for.
Oh,
stuff.
My God.
I was a real skis. Like, I was not.
This keeps getting better and better.
I was an ugly drug addict. I know that you can say
and
generally.
You're just hanging around. Well, that's something I always say about. The thing that you don't hear talked about when you do get sober is that it's not just the drugs, it's the situations you're in
yeah.
that become deadly.
Yeah.
Is that like, you know, yeah, you can die from drugs, mm-hmm. but if you're in that life, there's your possibility of getting killed exponentially grows
oh, yeah.
every day you walk out the door.
Yes, yes, by many, many factors.
Yeah.
You driving yourself. Is
driving,
one.
Oh, yeah. Buying, yeah. hanging out with people, getting rolled.
Yep, you owing know? Money, that's, yeah. Yeah, or just somebody who wants to, you know, if you're all high and somebody's just feeling like you don't know this person, yeah, who knows what
yeah.
they're like.
Who yeah. knows what they're going to do? Yeah, they're going to lose it.
And you're nodding off.
Right. And they're going to, yeah, it's well, good for you for living. How
Thank
long,
you.
How many years were you at that shit?
I mean, it probably was only 4 years.
But it's so funny that you like, never liked it, but you were freebasing. I never yeah. liked it, but I yeah. figured out how to make crack.
Yeah.
And that you must have liked that. People like that generally.
Yeah, it's always the first few times, right? And
yeah.
the rest of it is chasing that feeling yeah. and not yeah. wanting to deal with it.
Yeah.
Not wanting to deal with actually coming
not
off it.
Yeah, not yeah. having it.
I just wasn't, I was afraid of dealing with it.
But if you didn't get the orgasm brain from the dope, you mm-hmm. probably got it from the base.
Yeah, the crack was different. Yeah, yeah. It definitely did this like that poof and yeah, all that, yeah, but yeah. it's like literally a second. And then the rest of it's you're just like, crushing.
Yeah.
yeah, yeah, and then you're looking for it again.
Yeah, great.
Breaking
in your
off
carpet.
Another thing. In, yeah, your, in carpet. Your carpet, in your trash can. I think I did it in the bathroom.
Did you have psychosis? Did you get psychosis?
Oh, yeah. And once I learned afterward what an overdose is, I think I overdosed every day.
Yeah.
I was hearing stuff. I was
yeah,
sweating.
Yeah.
I was,
yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
all
the hearing
things.
Thing. That's always exciting. Yeah.
yeah, seeing. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I had full songs written of seeing like people in my yard or knocking on my back door window and. And I saw what thought woman was standing outside my door, like just holding her arm up and looking at me, frozen. It was a tree.
Yeah.
The next day, I realized it was a tree after I came out from under the table.
How fucked up were you? Were you like, the lady turned into a tree?
Yeah.
This stuff is really,
really good.
Wow.
So, magic.
So, like, is anybody trying to help?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but what can anyone really do when you're that far? I mean, I was like I said, of the amount
you're
I was
just
doing,
in this apartment. Like, where was all the money from? Just from work?
Work, yeah. So that's why I would go to those jobs and get messed up on them. I was just, trying to stay high.
You were Charlie Sheening it.
Yeah, I gave up on the idea of my career. Like, I was like, I thought once, you know.
But you were still taking shit.
Lots.
And you still had an agent.
I still had an agent. Yeah, and you know.
And
I,
Lee I, hung
Lee.
Out to drive.
Yeah, he left and became a successful director.
I'll say. Yeah.
And I watching that was hard, but also inspiring. You know, it was inspiring because it felt like, you know, I could, you know, I don't know, I was a piece of that, which I'm not. I see now though. But part of me was like, oh, I'm attached to him somehow.
Right.
It's weird.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you're like delusional and fucking strung out on drugs, you're like, that's me.
I mean,
that's part of me.
Everything
connected
was.
To that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you, no, just ask you because I'm curious. Did you really think you were doing something with the music? Was that?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was cool. I thought it was like it was, but no, I was just using loops and like, you know,
oh, God,
no, nothing.
You really
nothing
did
good.
It. You really that was
I
like
was that guy.
The solo journey, man.
I was every caricature you can imagine of a young actor breaking through too early.
Well, just the drug addict stuff where you're just sort of like alone, celebrating your genius of nothing. When you're making your music.
Sending it to people who don't want to listen to it.
No, you sent it to
people.
Oh,
sure. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
check this out. They put it, actually, two of my songs on a, well, they were going to put on a soundtrack, but it
didn't happen.
They were just appeasing me, I think.
So how do you finally get help?
A couple things happened. Like, I'm, you know, I went up to Canada, shot, and met, shot that movie and met my girl.
Nancy?
Jackie.
Jackie.
And I left after that, so it was like a long distance thing. And
but you didn't get clean yet.
I tried to go back up with her and I got rejected by Canada. I got, you know, they
wouldn't let me in.
I had to turn around. I couldn't go back up.
Would you have a record?
Yeah, I had been arrested right before that movie. After Heath died, who was my close friend, a couple months after that, I got arrested for possession and passing a counterfeit 100.
What?
I didn't know it was counterfeit. I'm literally out of my every. It could have been Monopoly money.
So when did you meet Heath?
I met Heath on Four Feathers. Yeah, and
okay.
we hit off right away like brothers. Like we were very close immediately.
And so that's how you spend time in Australia?
Yeah. Well, no, actually, I went and shot Ghost Rider in Australia. He was there shooting. I can't remember the name of it. Yeah, but he was shooting something too.
Oh, so like his career. You just watching that happen while you're in that room picking through your carpet.
You know, I'm going to tell you about that because this is we did Four Feathers and Lee Daniels wanted me to do Monsters Ball and I had been talking to them about doing Monsters Ball.
What part would you have played in that?
The kid, the one Heath played eventually, who shot himself, the son.
Oh, right.
And I decided I didn't want to do it because it was too much like American Beauty and I thought this is too similar and I want to avoid it. And so they were like, well, you got to do it. They're counting on you. And so I said, well, what if I can get Heath Ledger? Yeah, and then Heath came over to my hotel room and I just begged him. And I was like, do a Southern accent. I'll show you. And he could do it anyway. He didn't really need my help. And,
really?
And I was like, do you want to do this role? It's amazing. I just think it's too close to what I've done. And he was like, yeah, I want to do it. And it turned, he flipped his career. Where people were like, oh, he can, you know, he was sort of more recognized as a rom-com actor, potentially that kind of actor. And I knew he was something better. He knew something more than that.
Yeah.
And he showed it on that movie and it got him going, right?
So you guys were buddies before you were using, really?
Yeah. We were, and we partied together, but we were never like a problem with each other.
Right.
Like, it wasn't like
you
that.
You did that on your own.
We had a good time. That's when I was having a good time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I did all that, I went alone, like a cat going off to the woods.
What happened with him? Did he get strung out? Or
no,
was that just an accident?
That's an accident. Yeah. From I had been speaking to him less than because he had a kid and I was getting strung out and I was trying to avoid bringing anything into his life,
right?
Which I regret now, but that's from what I understood, he wasn't doing crazy stuff or anything.
Yeah, that's too bad.
It was sad.
How did that affect you?
I had a weird reaction to it. I denied it immediately, and I wouldn't go to the memorial because I was also messed up. But I denied it, and then it hit me months later. And
that it happened.
Yeah,
but you were too fucked up to really. To process it.
Yeah, and I felt guilty almost, like somehow I had something to do with it. Because,
or that you're alive. You survivor's
that
guilt.
Too. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I still kind of have that a little bit, yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Because I did way more than him, and I was way worse off than him. And I just sometimes feels like, you know, that's unfair.
Yeah. He won an Oscar, didn't he? Or the movie,
Brokeback. Did he win a post-op? Did he win one for Dark Knight, right? No, he got close with Brokeback.
Oh, yeah, Dark Knight,
yeah,
right.
Dark Knight he won it, but yeah. Brokeback probably was what he should have run it for. Mm. I mean, I love Dark Knight, and he blew the lid off. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But I really thought Brokeback was a harder thing for him to do.
Yeah.
And he did it so well. So anyways, who knows with awards? You can never.
Wait, how was your jealousy factor?
110. Like I was off the charts with Dark Knight because I'm also a Batman fan. But and I was scared for him when he took it. I said, you're never going to do what Jack did.
Yeah.
And then he was like, so that, yeah. I mean, but I don't feel that way now. I felt very strongly that then. I wanted that.
Yeah.
Oh, I wanted that, right? Like, and so
that just added to the shame festival.
Yes. He died. It came out. He was amazing. There's a lot of things just beat me down. Any confidence I had was at a low point.
Wow. Yeah. So, all right. So you try to go back to Canada and they won't let you come in.
Yeah.
And your chick is up there.
Yeah.
And
she was with me and when I got rejected and she had to go up and I had to go back.
That's a proud moment. Did she know you had gotten arrested and shit?
Yeah. Well, I had forgotten about it until that moment, until I had avoided courts and all this stuff. And,
yeah.
And so I went and fixed it after that. But yeah.
Okay. So what?
Sorry. It's crazy. Sometimes when I roll back everything, it just like, what the hell, man?
Well, it's interesting because when you're in a chaotic life, just how much you get done, it's not worth anything, but but there's a lot of activity.
You haven't heard my music. You don't know what it's worth.
But there's just so much activity because your life's a fucking chaotic drama.
Yeah.
All the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I really didn't want it not to be, I guess. I could have stopped it at any moment.
No, you couldn't.
Well, I guess some things I could have, right? I mean, some point I could have been like, all right, you're doing too many drugs. That's what eventually happened.
But if you're a drug addict, it's not an easy moment to come by.
No, and because... sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I was going to say it doesn't happen like that. Mm. It's,
how did it happen?
I started to think, I want to get cleaned up for her, but when I went back to LA, I just, of course, fell right back into it. And maybe went worse because it was all starting to come. I was never going to get
everything.
This girl.
Heath's dead, the girl, you can't get into Canada.
Can't get.
What's the fucking, what's the fucking point?
Where am I going to run to when Donald Trump's eventually elected?
I know. We're all wondering. We got to wonder again now.
Yeah. Oh, I got my out. So,
where's that? Oh, you married a Canadian.
Yeah.
You fucking. You figured it out.
I did. Yeah. I was ahead of it.
So
Robert Downey Jr. actually being open about his recovery and how far he went, and I had met him a few times.
He was in jail.
Right.
He did real time.
He did real time, and he was doing the same shit. And so when I saw him get cleaned and career could come back, it was like the first thing, a moment of like, you can do that. So, you can do that.
So you're like, I can be Spider-Man.
Still,
yeah,
they're still, they'll let me, we'll reboot it, yeah, older Spider-Man. That's what I'm talking about now.
So you'd met him, but he didn't reach out to you, but you were inspired.
Yeah, it was just his press, you know, and just the way, and so it was like, I can do this. And then after that, it was, I moved to my mom's house in Baltimore.
Proud moment.
Lived there for like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The star is back.
So proud of you, son. Being so proud of myself, Mom. I did it. I'm back home.
Yeah. And you did it cold turkey?
No, it was just ran out of money. It was part of it. So money, it ended up just being alcohol, which I hated. And then it was like, I had no, so combination of that was drying me out. Perspective was changing with the girl. Mom was reinforcing my, you know, giving me some confidence back.
Yeah.
And I was auditioning in New York. I was taking a train up there.
So you just went home. You crapped out here. You probably had debts.
Yeah, I did. That's what I was avoiding, was someone I owed, and fixed that when I came back eventually.
A dangerous guy?
He said he was, but you know, it's hard to know who really is or not, especially in that game. Some people are just talking.
So you couldn't afford drugs, you tapped out, you were in debt, and you were scared.
Scared.
But you kind of wanted that girl. And you kind of, you didn't have anywhere to go, so you went back to your mom.
Yeah, as we do.
Yeah.
And then I booked a job. And my dad was in Arkansas, and I would have gone to him too, but it was easier.
They got divorced at some point?
Oh yeah, they got divorced right after I left high school.
See what you did?
It's all my fault.
Yeah,
Mom. I was the only one of my brothers, I think, who didn't feel that way. I was sort of like, it's life. This happens. It was sad. Yeah. Still sad.
But she took you in, and it was good.
It was great. And so, I booked a job there. And then when I got on that job, I went and shot in Argentina. It's called There Be Dragons.
Uh huh.
There was an actor on there who was sober, and he was just, didn't know I was having trouble because I was sort of dealing with it then, just drinking and just hanging on, white knuckle, as they say. And my future wife was with me. She came with me to Argentina.
Just to watch you?
Oh, she just came to visit and be in Argentina.
Yeah.
And which was amazing. And
what did she do?
She was an associate producer on a television show up in Canada. Uh-huh. And she had been an AD on a few projects.
Okay.
And before that, a journalist.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Legit person.
Yeah. So she comes with you.
You're
there with a sober guy.
Yep. Yeah. And he started talking about he was talking about driving in a car and looking outside and looking at how beautiful the day was and how lucky he was to be alive and all that stuff.
Gratitude trip.
Yes. And as they say, you know, it happens like that. You know, you just hear it from somebody and it clicks like, oh, I want that back.
Yeah, right.
I want that. So I went to him and said, help me. And he said, okay, just come with me to some meetings. And it was great because it was Argentina. It was small English speaking meetings, like 5 people.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel overwhelmed like in LA I would have. I think I would have walked right out of those big meetings.
You had seen half the guys you used with and your dealer.
Exactly.
And eventually one of you would fuck the other one up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, standing outside of those, like standing outside the club, the same people.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but it wasn't going to help me. So I, you know, going and seeing him in these meetings and already having my connection to God. So I had my higher power.
So you could
already
tap into that shit.
Yeah, it was all like, it just worked, and it was like
the guy that sent the lady who turned into a tree.
That's
same
how
guy.
He was looking for me.
Yeah, he was.
By scaring me, exactly. But looking for me.
Exactly.
Oh, man. There were a few times I got pulled over downtown that I could probably thank God for that.
Sure.
I got out of that.
Yeah.
So that guy, he inspired me. So I went in and I got sober, and it was like, I flipped just like that. It was like, oh, I don't need any of it.
Right.
I need this light, you know, peak cloud, all that stuff. I got really, really happy. Happier than I've ever been in my life. And worked on that project, and that was moving, and that ended all that. I mean, for now, I shouldn't say ended, as we don't say that. But
you stayed in the game. You stayed in the rooms and stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't go as often now.
Sure.
Because you know it's been over 10 years for me too. So an old timer once told me, remember, it's a bridge back to life. Don't make AA your entire life after a certain time. He doesn't mean immediately.
Of course.
This is over time.
But you know, some people need it for the long haul. And they keep the thing running.
Which is great. I can go show up.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
And I also do therapy, and I have a great family. I got a lot of
That's what's sort of amazing. Because I mean, you were really... You know, it's a great story because you have a family, you have kids, you seem together, you know, your skin looks correct. You don't look like you did permanent damage. You never really stopped working, whether you liked the projects or not.
No.
It seems like you just kept working.
I did. Yeah, I got lucky. American Beauty is still what I get work off of.
Really?
I got this job at Yellowstone. Off of American Beauty, yeah.
How is that possible?
Well, Taylor, you know, when I had seen Taylor's stuff and he had stuff coming out, I was like, we got to beg to get on one of his projects. I really want to work with this guy or on something. And out of the blue, he came to me and asked me to do this Yellowstone show. And I was like, well, yeah. But when I talked to him, he told me that it was from American Beauty when he was younger. It just stayed with him all these years, and he always wanted to work with me.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? Like,
so that way, right, you made an impression.
I made an impression.
And now you've been doing this thing for 5 years?
Yeah, 5 years. Yeah, yeah. 5 years off American Beauty. Yeah.
But it's a good gig. You like the character?
I love it. Well, yeah, so I got a lot of feelings about this because it is by far the hardest character I've ever played within the realm of acting. It's the hardest thing I've ever done.
Mm.
And
how so?
Well, you know, first season it wasn't heavy.
He's like the son.
Yeah, he's the one of the sons
of the main rancher guy.
The big mega rancher, John Dutton. And he's one of the sons of John Dutton and the lawyer who kind of keeps the ranch running from a legal perspective, also potentially a politician that could help change the rules for the ranch.
Right.
So that's his directive by his father.
Yeah.
And anyways, we got into the second season and it got heavy quick because of a lot of stuff that happens in it for Jamie, my character.
Yeah.
I realized when I started to play it that I'm going to have to do something here that I haven't done ever before. It's open myself up to just pure sadness because he's just a sad guy. I was like, anger was playing in it and other emotions, and they didn't feel
the
quite
things
right.
That hide sadness.
Yes, right. That sadness, right. I tell people all the time, anger is not really an emotion. It's a reaction to sadness.
Yes.
Or it's a reaction to embarrassment. It's always a reaction, right?
Yeah.
But the sadness was
shame. Anger. Yeah, anger's got, is an all-purpose
reaction. It's the
reaction.
Yeah, exactly. You could even react to being,
Like even when you're happy. This is fucking amazing.
God, I love this. But I realized I'm going to have to open myself up to sadness, and it really dropped me into a weird place, not weird, but like heavy place quick. And
what did it do? What did it open? What was the trauma? Was it the shame thing or what?
I don't know. I think because I have always avoided just pure sadness, you know, I've dealt with it with humor or I've dealt with it with drugs or I dealt with it with anger,
right?
But I never just let it be.
Yeah. But you think you're a depressed guy? Or?
I think we've all got that in there. It's whether that becomes the prominent feeling.
Sure, sure, sure.
So my whatever depression I had in there, was starting to come out.
Oh, yeah.
And so it got really heavy, quick playing this character. And then not only that, there was complicated things about him and stuff. So it's been very hard to, but also very rewarding. I want to balance this by saying this is what I wanted, right? I mean, this is what I'm like, this is where I wanted to go as an actor for a long time.
And now you've got a full story arc. It's not like one movie.
No.
It's not a one-shot deal. You got to live in this guy.
Okay,
the character evolves and changes every season.
almost every scene for him. That's what got trippy. There's not a lot of screen time for Jamie, but I think I'm grateful because every scene started to become some new traumatic event or some reveal of sadness or depression that he has or whatever is broken in him. He's broken.
And you've got a heart.
And he's got a heart.
So it keeps getting...
And he's emotional.
Unlike shattered.
Yeah. And he deals with emotions. Oh, not deals with them. He reveals or shows and they take over him more than like the cowboys and everyone in Montana apparently.
Right.
Yeah. Except
well,
this guy.
Well, I mean, people love the show and they love all the spinoffs. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. It is the biggest thing. It's the biggest thing I've done. The most I've been recognized, I got recognized by my voice for the first time or ever.
Well, it's like you're very close to doing voiceovers now.
Come on.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get a job, by the way. That didn't really happen.
You just want to do a cartoon.
I really want to do that animal. I got that thing down.
But, all right. So I think we did good. You feel good?
Oh, yeah.
How old are your kids?
My kids are, my son's going to be 12 next week and my daughter's 8. And they're my life, man. They're everything. I just love being a dad. I didn't want kids at all. Knew I was not supposed to have kids, and then I had them. As soon as I knew my wife was pregnant, this is everything I ever wanted. It's weird, and I would give anything for them. I'd give up anything. I'd do anything for them.
Well, it's good. Well, I mean, you already have in a way. I mean, it's good that you know you're present for this shit, given where you were.
My son is named after the person who helped me. So he is
the guy in Argentina.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So he is. His name is my life.
Uh-huh.
Line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Good talking to you, man.
It's great talking to you. I do this every day, man. I see why you do it. It's fun. Yeah.
It's like a meeting.
Yeah. Or you can get in trouble.
Hey. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You don't want. We've talked enough. That was Wes Bentley. If you're just tuning in, what am I, in the radio? Look, you can watch Yellowstone Season 5 on Paramount, new episodes on Sunday nights. So, you know how this goes these days. Just hang out a minute, will you? Okay, look, here's my recommendation from the archive today. Episode 653 with Lorne Michaels. It was 7 years ago this week that we posted this episode. And look, I'd been talking about the guy my entire professional life. About the audition, I used to compulsively talk about it, or is that the right word? Or just, I would talk about it with everyone who was on SNL. And it was like what I thought happened in that room was I was obsessed with and really believed to a certain degree. I wrote about it in a book, it stayed with me forever. And then I talked to Lorne and we did it over 2 days. And I don't know, he definitely spoke to it, and I believed him. I chose to believe him. Listen.
I came in here. I waited an hour or so. Uh-huh. Tracy Morgan was out there waiting with me.
Do you know what day of the week it was? Where we were in production?
Maybe. I wish I remembered that. Yeah. I decided before I got here, I was smoking a lot of pot at the time, but I thought maybe I shouldn't smoke too much.
Uh-huh.
And I got here, and Tracy Morgan was there, and his hair looked very shiny. The hair was in very good shape.
Yes.
And I waited a while, and I was reading a Bruce Wagner book, I remember, and I came in here.
Had he been on stage the night that you performed?
Who, Tracy?
Yeah.
I don't know if he was. I mean, I know that we went to Stand Up New York.
Right, I remember, yeah.
Anyways, I come in here. In my recollection, there were books over here.
Uh-huh.
Was there?
It's probably pretty much the same as it's always been.
Right. Yeah. Steve Higgins was there. I walk in, and you said, how was Conan last night? Did they laugh? Did they laugh at you? It's better when they laugh. And that was nice. It was nice. I was scared.
And you'd done Conan the night before, right?
Yes. Okay. And then I sat down, and then you used a zoo analogy for comedians. Have you used that before?
Monkeys and all that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a regular thing.
No, it wasn't a regular thing. It was just my sort of beginning to piece together where comedians stood in Hollywood.
Right. The lions are scary.
When you go to the zoo, the first thing you want to see is the lion, because the lion is the king of the jungle, and it's regal.
Yeah.
And the second thing you want to see are the bears, because they're the strongest and the fastest.
Right.
And the third, you want to see the monkeys, because they're funny and occasionally one of them jerks off.
Right. And what I said, I don't think you had added the jerk off line yet.
Uh-huh.
Because I said, as long as they're not throwing their shit at you.
Yeah.
got nothing.
Yeah.
Got
nothing,
no laugh.
No.
From you.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Well, I would have gone softer, as you saw.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And Steve Higgins was like, this is not going well already.
And did you know Steve before?
Kinda. I met him once or twice.
Like on the scene.
Right. And then you just looked at me for a little while.
Uh-huh.
And Steve actually went, Lauren, and you said, it's important to look in someone's eyes. You can see a lot in someone's eyes. And then I was trying to exude some star quality of some kind,
right?
Which it was not successful.
God, you really remember this.
Yeah, I remember.
You can get every WTF episode ad-free with a WTF Plus subscription. Click on the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. On Thursday's show, I talked to Bruce Wagner, who I love. He's one of my literary heroes. I love reading his books. I've been with him since the first book years ago, Force Majeure, and in and out throughout all the books. A dark wizard. One of the true dark wizards. One of the great Hollywood satirists. And man, but I think I was able to manage the conversation this time because I really wanted... I've always seen him as this mystical wizard, and I was like, where does it come from? I needed to know. And I think I got there. This Friday, I'm in Eugene, Oregon at the Holt Center for the Performing Arts. That's November 18th. Bend, Oregon at the Tower Theater on Saturday, November 19th. Asheville, North Carolina at the Orange Peel for two shows on Friday, December 2nd. And then Nashville, Tennessee. I'm at the James K. Polk Center on Saturday, December 3rd. And my HBO special taping is at Town Hall in New York City on Thursday, December 8th. There are still tickets for the second show. Go to WTFpod.com/tour for all the dates and ticket info. Here we go. Some dirty Telecaster music. Monkey in La Fonda, cat angels everywhere.